This is Neve McIntosh. I'm Madame Vastra from Doctor Who, and you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I will see you in the future.
Too Much Scrolling for May 15th, 2018. I'm Steve Fodor.
It's mid-May, Steve. I'm Chip Hessenflow.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information.
Beware the Ides of May.
Is that a thing? Do we have to watch behind us? Are our friends going to stab us in the back?
I'm establishing that right now. That's a new tradition. Exactly.
Et tu, Chippe.
Exactly. Sort of Latin, a little bit different.
Right.
We're dressed in togas today, just so you know.
Film at 11. Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You know, I make these lists every week of all the stuff that I've seen, and some weeks there's like nothing on the list. I got to the document this week, and I have watched so many things this week.
Steve, Chip, it's been a busy week for you.
I have watched so many things, most of them streaming online. There's stuff on Amazon. There's stuff on Netflix. There's so many things to talk about. I want to start with The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Oh.
Have you heard of that?
Watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat.
Yes. The Adventures of Rocky and Bullwinkle.
Rocky, that trick never works.
This is a new show on Amazon Prime. It came out on Friday, and it's good. I've watched a lot of it.
Okay. And so it's a little bit different type of art style than we were previously used to.
Yeah. This is the art style that is much more like the
contemporary stuff, maybe Dexter's Laboratory.
Oh, yes.
Sort of that type of stuff.
And the comedy in it is much more like the Powderpuff Girls. It's that same sort of late 90s, early 2000s kind of cartoon. But it's still got that same Rocky and Bullwinkle flair to it. The one criticism I have so far in watching what I've watched is that they are 23-minute episodes instead of the 10-minute little short pieces with the cliffhangers that we got used to with the old show.
Well, there you go. And you also got to see some other things.
Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars.
You saw something Star Wars today?
Yeah, Star Wars The Last Jedi. I watched it with the Riff Trax commentary.
They made fun of Star Wars, Steve?
They were really gentle. They were really kind, because I think that there's a lot of crossover in fandom between Riff Trax and Star Wars.
Well, you saw how they took out
at least in this basement there are.
You saw how they took out George Lucas, so of course they got to be gentle.
Yeah, they were real nice about it. But this is a good commentary. Those of you who don't know what Riff Trax is, it is the guys who used to be MST3K, Mystery Science Theater guys. They sit and watch the movie with you. What Riff Trax does is they sell you just the commentary. $4 just of these three guys talking while the movie's going on. You get your own copy of the movie. You sync it up with their app. Their app syncs automatically. It's magic. And then you can watch the movie with your friends. I enjoy this. I enjoy it a lot.
Now, you also got to see something on Netflix.
Yep. Netflix is the stand-up comedy box in my house. If I want to watch stand-up comedy, I go to Netflix. I caught the John Mulaney Kid Gorgeous at Radio City special.
Tell me a little bit about it.
John Mulaney was a writer for Saturday Night Live for 5 years. He is a brilliant writer who has actually been able to make a stand-up career out of his writing. Not many people can do that. Some people are not good at the delivery, just the writing. This is a stand-up comedy show at Radio City Music Hall. He talks at the beginning about how it's ridiculous that he's at Radio City Music Hall, that this is way better a place than the things he's about to say. He talks about his childhood in Chicago. He talks about how he... He had a Chicago police officer who came to his school to give the Stranger Danger speech for years on end. He names the guy. He says, this guy walked in and said these ridiculous things. He said, when you are kidnapped, not if, when you are kidnapped, here's what you need to do.
Well, there you go. That's where all comedy starts, Steve.
It starts in a place of pain. The cop is still alive, and he has gone and had an interview with the Chicago Tribune saying that I'm glad that I impacted this young person's life, but I'm not sure I like being made fun of right now. This is a funny special. I do recommend it.
Now, that's not the only thing you saw on Netflix.
Yeah, I've been tuning into My Next Guest Needs No Introduction. This is the David Letterman Netflix series. They do a monthly interview. This is the fourth month that they've put out an episode. And this month's episode was Tina Fey sitting down to talk with Dave about comedy and about what she's done with her career. It was a really good interview. The best part of the My Next Guest Needs No Introduction is the other interviews. Dave goes out into the field and talks with other people. He talked to Buddy Guy, Chicago Blues legend, in this episode. I really recommend this show.
Buddy Guy's like in his 80s.
And is as powerful a blues legend as he was 40 years ago. He is the man in Chicago blues right now. And the interview with him is really good. I recommend that strongly. What have you been watching?
Now, I watched The Magic Pill. I think I saw that on Amazon Prime.
Okay.
Now, The Magic Pill is basically a story of food and the food that we eat and the foods that we eat that make us sick. So they start off in Australia, which was, that's called Foreshadowing Steve.
Mm.
They start off in Australia.
Keep that in mind.
Where they were using the aborigines down there and how they were incredibly healthy for their age as they moved up in age. And then we introduced the standard American diet, Steve, the SAD diet.
SAD, standard yes. American diet.
Sugar and flour. And pretty soon, guess what? They had all the problems that every one of us have.
Hmm.
And this is a lot of interviews with doctors, a lot of interviews with people who are food nutritionalists. And it talks a lot about the foods we eat and the effect that it has on our body. I can think of the autistic kid that they have that's very young, that was having a very difficult time kind of getting started, eating Doritos, eating chicken nuggets, and drinking sugary apple juice. And guess what? They took her off of these foods.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? She went through withdrawals, just like a person on drugs would go through withdrawals. And then they started introducing real food to her. So real chicken and broccoli and real foods. And she did not want to eat those at first. But you know what? If you wait long enough, we all get hungry, right?
Right.
So anyway, they introduced a real food to her. Guess what? Her life improved. You could see that her all the challenges they were having. So anyway, that's one data point on many. We got lots of these types of stories in there. So the idea is to question what you put in your body and let food be the healing agent of your life that it could be.
You've also been watching The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu. This is a powerful story.
Well, I got Hulu, or I signed up for Hulu for the month with the idea of watching this and starting the second season. But man, let me tell you right now, Pampadour talked a little bit about how much she enjoyed the book and how much she enjoyed the series. And I'm watching it. The first episode is like hardcore, man.
Yeah,
I'm telling you like this. This is a dystopian world where basically part of the population, particularly women, become sterile.
Mm-hmm.
And they're unable to have children. So there is a group of people who can have children. And interestingly enough, they didn't have the power. They were enslaved by the other group.
Right.
There's this picture of this woman having a sexual encounter with the gentleman, incredibly impersonal, with the wife holding the maid in her arms, looking at her with disdain. As they're trying to get pregnant. Well, let me just say, this is a rough, rough go of it.
And in fact, hard world.
It doesn't get any lighter as we move along the series. I recommend this, but with reservations. And I'm not even sure if I recommend it because I just had a really hard time watching this. And I know it's not real, but anytime you're dealing, if all parties were consensual, okay, that's one thing, but this is not. This is truly a sort of a slavery type of situation, and this is a tough place to be. So anyway,
it's a hard utopia or dystopia.
That's right. I ended up getting to see it. So there we go. Steve, is there anything coming out this week that we should know about?
Good news, Chip. Deadpool 2 is opening this weekend. It's time to revisit the world of Deadpool. That movie did so well when it came out 2 years ago. It's amazing. thing that this raunchy, R-rated, foul-mouthed superhero captured our hearts in so many ways.
So Ryan Reynolds has learned a little bit about advertising and promotion.
The promotion behind this movie has been phenomenal the last couple of weeks.
Very, very funny. And that's, I think, what we're getting to is, mm-hmm. if we could say all the DC stuff where it gets really, really dark real quick.
Yeah.
The Deadpool is incredibly light. It's very fun. It makes fun of itself as a movie.
Breaks the fourth wall all the time.
Anyway, I think this will be, there's a good chance this will be a high grossing film.
Yeah, I think this one's going to make some money. I don't know if it'll make more money than the Avengers movie this weekend, but it might.
Now, Steve, HBO has something coming out that looks like it's pretty interesting.
Talk about your dark dystopias. Fahrenheit 451 is being made into another movie. This one's going to be on HBO.
I thought that guy died in Black Panther, Steve. Are you saying he came back for this movie?
Yeah, this is Michael B. Jordan playing the fireman in Fahrenheit 451. I look forward to this one.
I don't think you have to read this to see what the message is. I'm just teasing.
I was about to jump down your throat and go, no, you have to. Oh, now I get it. Ah, it's a joke about the books not being. Okay.
Now,
I got it.
Neil Gaiman's got a fun movie that's coming out, or based on one of his stories.
Yeah, and the trailer for this looks phenomenal. It's called How to Get Girls to Talk at Parties. And it's a movie based on a Neil Gaiman short story. And it looks like just a fun film.
No, it's just too bad that you can't go to two movies the same night, because this is definitely, I mean, with Deadpool coming out.
Go Saturday.
Well, I guess you could see two movies in one week.
If you got movies. Pass and go every day.
That's right.
This looks like a lot of fun. Go and click on the trailer in our show notes and check that one out. There's a movie called Book Club where four lifelong friends get together and read 50 Shades of Grey for their book club.
And this is all people who are, let's just say that they're in their probably late 50s.
Yeah, this is an all-star cast of those women that we've been watching for years in films. This is Diane Keaton, Jane Fonda, Candace Bergen, and Mary Steenburgen.
This looks like it's a lot of fun, too.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to go see Deadpool 2 and you're a lady, maybe this would be the type of thing to go see.
There is a very British movie called On Chesil Beach.
Steve, this looks like a great film.
It is 1962 England, and a young couple find their idyllic romance.
A little sexual freedom. This is not quite the BBC, but you know, it's right under there. This is this actually looks pretty good.
Yeah,
I would see this.
It'd be interesting to watch. There is a movie called First Reformed. This is a military chaplain. You're going through life and getting to those hard pieces of what needs to be done.
Ethan Hawke gives up all
Ethan
hope.
Ethan Hawke, yeah.
Gives up all hope in this in the trailer. Let's just say this is pretty dark, man.
Well, it is very dark, but he gives up all hope and then goes to Cedric the Entertainer as another pastor to get advice on what he should do.
Well, there you go. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Still very dark, though. Steve, even on Cedric the Entertainer.
Let's just go even darker. Do you know anything any darker?
Dark Crimes is our next title. This is a murder investigation of a slain businessman. Boy.
This is Jim Carrey, man, with a big beard.
Yes.
And this is darker than Cable Guy.
There's no comedy. This is not a dark comedy. This is a dark mystery.
Postmodern mysteries,
too. Oh, boy. There's one called Carter and June. This is a heist movie. Really standard heist movie. Hey, let's go rob a bank kind of a film.
All right, Steve, let's say you had children and you didn't really look at a trailer and you wanted to go see something.
Oh, let's say they dragged you to the theater and they're very young children. What do young children love most? Talking dogs.
Oh, my goodness. So we're going to have a talking dog movie with multiple talking dogs. You know that's going to be good.
Uh-huh.
You probably have to go see it. But if you have children, and if you know what? If you have a girlfriend or a wife and they don't know what's going on at the theater and you know Deadpool sold out.
Show dogs.
Just take them to show dogs. Just trust us.
Just click on this trailer. This is that kids movie with the talking dog with all the fart jokes that you need for your entire weekend.
Oh, excellent. It sounds great, Steve.
Book it. Brings us to our book of the week, And, you know, I read a lot of books, Chip.
You read a lot of books?
I read a lot of books.
That's what happens when we have a podcast where we have to review a book a week. We tend to read a lot of books, Steve.
Well, it was an idea that I had because I read a lot of books. And I said to you, hey, let's put together a podcast and let's do a book of the week. And you went, wow, book of the week? I'm not sure about that. But there's so many great stories out there. There's so many authors that maybe you've never heard of. And we can connect with so many of them around the world now with this new internet thing.
What's this around the world stuff, Steve?
I mean, like really around the world. Really? Like Tasmania is the location that we're...
Is that near Transylvania?
No, we're not just going to name countries that start with T.
Oh, no, we're not. Okay, so Tasmania is in Australia.
It's a state in Australia. It's a little island off the southern coast of Australia.
Oh, tell me about this. And let's keep going.
That is where we'll find our guest today. This is Tansy Rayner Roberts from Tasmania. She is a wonderful author and a podcaster, and I'm so proud to say that we have Tansy here with us today. Good morning, Tansy.
Hi, it's nice to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you. You are a wonderful speaker, you are a wonderful writer, and you have so much to share with the world. I just want to share with everybody else all of your amazing talent.
Well, I have no objection to that. That sounds pretty good to me.
And so our listeners will know that it's the evening time when we're recording this show.
Mm-hmm. Different than normal. Normally we record early in the morning because we're morning people.
And we're talking to her in the future.
That's right.
That's right. So it's morning time.
It's morning for her instead of for us.
That's right.
Magic.
I'm speaking to you from tomorrow.
Exactly. Steve loves time travel. And there we go. Steve. We've got a portal that brings you right there.
So, Tansy, your doctorate degree is in classics. You have an obsession with ancient Rome. What is it about ancient Rome that draws you so much?
Oh, look, ever since I was a kid, it was just a time period that caught my attention and dragged me in. And it was actually from reading novels. I think probably my first big introduction to ancient Rome was Colin McCulloch, who is best-selling Australian novelist, wrote this series of very hard-hitting historical novels set in Rome. And I was randomly given the first one as a birthday present when I was like 13, and I just became obsessed. And from there, like, that was what I was most interested in university. It wasn't remotely practical, but I already knew that I wanted to write. And I learned, I guess, fairly early on that it was quite hard for me to find writing mentors and teachers in a small community who were interested in the kind of writing that I was interested in, which is science fiction and fantasy. So I thought I'd better use my university time to research and learn about lots of interesting things that I could then channel into fiction, which was my excuse for taking a degree that is not very practical for the job market, but I just loved it so much, you know, studying both the history, the literature, the art of ancient Rome. It was just so exciting and sucked me in.
All right, so your latest book is called The Creature Court. So why don't you tell us about that project?
Yeah, well, actually, look, the original Creature Court trilogy has been published once before. I sold the trilogy to HarperCollins. I actually sold it to them about 10 years ago. It was published over a three-year period from 2010 to 2012. And it's still one of the most probably commercially successful series that I sold in Australia, but it also came out at a time when bookshops were closing down across the world and we had some pretty sort of catastrophic things happen in publishing. So I never felt that the series really got the, never quite found an audience beyond Australia, certainly. It never made it beyond our windy shores. So I ended up requesting the rights back a couple of years ago because everything quietened down and I wanted to relaunch it, republish it myself and try and get a wider audience. It's epic fantasy, but with a very strong ancient Roman influence and also 1920s influence, which are both things you don't see as much in epic fantasy, which tends to be more medieval in its influence. It's actually quite urban fantasy as well. It's like, you know, there's a lot of a Buffy the Vampire style action and adventure. It just happens to be in a magical other world and not in, California.
So we've got flappers, we've got 1920s, we've got Roman influence, we've got monsters running around. This book has everything.
It's a toga party.
It really does. So yeah, I decided to bring it back into print, and that's how I set up the Kickstarter this year. And I'm also writing a new novella to fit in with the trilogy, because, you know, a lot of my Australian fans already have the original trilogy on their shelves.
So the Kickstarter gave you the ability to sell it around the world. I'm a backer of the Kickstarter so that I can get some of this great writing into my collection as well. That's amazing that we have gone to a place where Kickstarter can change the way that you're publishing. What has Kickstarter done to change the way that you are able to sell your books?
Well, it is. It's very exciting. I've been involved in some other Kickstarter projects before, mostly with small press, like anthologies and things that I've been involved in, either as an editor or just more tangentially. So it is very exciting as a way to find a wider audience and a wider readership. It works very well to get, we say, you know, Kickstarter is not just about funding. A lot of it is, it's pretty much your publicity campaign as well.
Mm-hmm.
It allows you to pre-sell your books so that you can then proceed with a very much more comfortable business backing underneath you, because you know how many copies you've sold up front. It allows you to cover those big set costs, like in my case, cover art.
Mm-hmm.
That was the big thing. I wanted to fundraise so I could pay for really good cover art up front without going massively into debt to publish, you know, what's basically four books at once, which is quite a big undertaking. It's bigger than anything I've been involved in before with crowdfunding, but it's been really exciting. And it also, you know, if a Kickstarter doesn't fund, it means you haven't found your audience, you haven't captured their attention. So it's actually kind of good to know that up front,
mm-hmm.
that maybe, you know, rather than sink huge amounts of money into a project and then find you have no audience, it's quite exciting to know that in my case, I have over 400 readers lined up ready for these books to be rolled out to them. It's a great relief.
Yeah.
And there's a security in that. And at the end of it, once I've delivered all the books from the Kickstarter, I have still the cover art, I have the books, I can list them for sale. Without, as I said, going into a great deal of debt up front. So it's very exciting from a business standpoint, but also from an artistic thing, because that idea of trying to find out if your story is interesting enough and saleable enough before you get to the point of actually turning it into books.
That's awesome. That is a great way that we've changed the publishing industry, and so you have that data in front of you that way. Now, you are the first Australian woman to win a Hugo Award. These are the science fiction, the really big, amazing science fiction awards, and you were the first Australian woman to win a Hugo Award. So how does it feel to be recognized for your writing and your podcasting? You have two, right?
I do have two, yeah. It was amazing. Like the fan writing Hugo came at a time when I'd been doing an awful lot of blogging and essay writing. And yeah, to have that number of people, especially internationally, sort of pay attention to what I was writing and being interested in it was very, very exciting. And around about the same time, that was when our podcast was taking off, and the Galactic Suburbia, which is the podcast for which I won a couple of years later, we were really excited to have been in the beginning of the best fan cast category, because Hugo's have only been awarding awards to podcasts over the last can't think of the numbers off my top of my head. I want to say around 6 years. But we were there. We were in the first shortlist, and that was really, really exciting because it was such a big deal, the development of the new category, which in some way was because it felt like the podcasts were starting to overshadow traditional fanzines. And it was a question of, well, is a podcast equivalent to a book, or is it equivalent to a fanzine? And because podcasts just had such a wider access to listeners, there was a danger of the fanzine category being so completely taken over by podcasts that they would disappear. So yeah, they created the new. I wasn't 100% sold on the idea of it being listed as a fan cast, just because I think podcasts, you know, they're not necessarily fan. A lot of podcasts are, obviously, but not all podcasts are fan productions. Quite a few of them are quite, you know, professional and are sort of more equivalent to critical work. So yeah, it's an odd sort of thing, but we've become very fond of that category over the years. And of course, we won 1 year, which meant that I went from being the first Australian woman to win a Hugo, which was a pretty massive thing, because there's only a handful of Australians at all have won Hugos, to being equal second with my two female co-hosts.
That's awesome.
So that was pretty fantastic. And my husband is our producer. So he got a Hugo too for Galactic Suburbia, which means we're pretty sure we're the only household in Australia with three Hugo awards.
You walk around with these massive necklaces.
Is there a sash involved?
The trophy is enormous. It's this very large metal rocket.
Nice.
It's, you know, it's about the size of two blenders. It's a big it's a big trophy.
And you've got two in your household.
Three.
Three.
Yeah. But, you know, it's a great honor. And that's the thing, you know, working out of Australia, I don't travel that much. I can't really afford to. I'm mostly based out of Australia. I have a family of young kids. You know, it's not really in the cards to me to go to all the conventions or to promote my work in person very often. So podcasting and blogging and all that has been my way of connecting to the international community from my little island.
All right. So you mentioned a few of the books that got you into ancient Rome and the classics and things of that nature. What other influences do you have when writing? And also, what authors are you currently reading?
So many. Okay. Well, growing up, my biggest, probably inspirational authors as I was figuring out fantasy fiction were people like, some of the books, authors like Jennifer Robinson or David and Lee Eddings, you know, those were the epic fantasy that I read. I adored the Empire trilogy by Raymond Feist and Jani Wirtz, you know, those big epic fantasy. But then I read so much of the epic fantasy, and then it was Terry Pratchett who kept me in fantasy fiction, because just at the point where I felt that I was like reading, I'd read too much and I was kind of over the genre, I discovered Terry Pratchett at exactly the right age.
Nice. I'm a huge fan of Terry Pratchett. I just love the way that he was able to meld the comedy, the Monty Python-esque comedy, with that epic, with all of those tropes from fantasy, and just put them together in such a beautiful package.
Yeah, absolutely. Like when I really properly started writing and writing work for publication, I totally wanted to be Terry Pratchett. Like that combination of the humor and the cynicism and the cleverness and the epic fantasy, I just adored. And it's something I've always looked for. And more recently, I still, much though I love so many different kinds of science fiction and fantasy, but I think when I find humor and humor done well, it's just such a gift, because it is still something that's not rare, but I think you often don't hear talked about as much. So my favorite of the YA fantasy writers is Sarah Rhys-Brennan. She's just this fantastic writer. Her banter and her characters are just so delightful, but she will also reach into your chest and like crush your heart. She'll just like destroy you emotionally as a reader, but she's also hilarious. Like, what else could you possibly want? Most recently, one of my favorite reads is Aliette de Bodard. Her, The Tea Master and the Detective, is this fantastic new novella, which is kind of a gender swapped Sherlock Holmes in space. Hmm. Only the Watson character is a spaceship who brews tea. And it's just so great.
Okay. I love it when we have guests that give me a whole reading list. I need to improve my reading list, and I love that you have all these things that I've never heard of. That one is going on my reading list, Tansy.
Yeah, so yeah, Aliette de Bodard's, her science fiction is wonderful. She combines her, she's a an author of French and Vietnamese descent, and she uses her influences and her science fiction so cleverly. With Sarah Rhys Brennan, her book from last year, In Other Lands, was this wonderful, hilarious takedown of kind of epic fantasy tropes, but also, you know, the, I guess, the Harry Potter style going off to magical school to find your destiny tropes. Mm-hmm. And that has been nominated for, I think, not the Hugo, but the, you know, the YA. Yeah, no, it has actually, the new YA Hugo. I'm pretty sure it's on the list, but that's a fantastic book.
Excellent.
And the most exciting one that appeared in my house this week that I haven't got to read yet, but I'm so excited by, is Space Opera by Catherine Valente.
I have looked at that one several times, and I haven't put it in my cart yet. Tell us about that one.
I'm just so angry that I didn't write this book myself, which it's basically Eurovision in space.
Yes.
It, as far as I can make out, I haven't read it yet, but it's basically putting the opera into space opera. It's a space musical as a novel, and every review I've read has been comparing her to Douglas Adams. And okay. That's like that for a start, like Douglas Adams and science fiction comedy, like that is the benchmark to reach, right?
Right.
To have a female author actually being spoken of in the same voice as Douglas Adams with science fiction comedy, I find that really fascinating because, you know, it is very rare to see women celebrated for writing humor. And as I said, it's something that I've often aspired to do. So it's very exciting to see. And also an author of the caliber of Catherine Valente, like all her books are amazing, but she writes so many different kinds of books and some of them are quite dark. The book that she wrote last year, The Refrigerator Monologues, was this most amazing angry feminist story about the women who are killed off in superhero comics.
Hmm.
So it was a reference to the girls in refrigerators trope.
And Gail Simone.
It's set in the underworld and it's these angry women talking about how they were basically killed to move forward the narratives of their superhero boyfriends. It's amazing, but it's such a dark book. And the fact that she's come out this year with this space comedy is just, that's really exciting.
I'm definitely putting the space opera on my shopping list. I will have that soon. Maybe we can talk again, maybe, after we've both read it. You have
absolutely. It's a really glittery book, too. A friend sent it to me, actually. I have a birthday coming up, and she sent me the hardback as a present. And nice. It's such a pretty book. Mm-hmm. So it might be one of those where you need to have it in hardback. I don't know if you're a solid book buyer or an ebook buyer.
I'm an ebook buyer. I teach computers for a living, so I'm almost all digital. So
I'm mostly digital these days just because there is no room for more books in my house.
That's part of the conversation, yes. No doubt.
But I will make the exception for a book that is really pretty or that I know I want to lend out to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm glad to have this one in hardback.
So tell our listeners all about your three really successful podcasts. They're so different, and I'm a listener, and I really enjoy your work. Tell us about your podcasts.
Okay, well, I'll start with Verity, since that's the one that you know me from.
Yes, I do.
Verity, although it was chronologically, it's my second podcast. Verity is six smart women talking about Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm.
And it came to be because a friend of mine, Deb Stanish, was lamenting on Twitter the fact that, you know, at the time, the Doctor Who podcasting community was huge. Doctor Who fandom and podcasting just took off in a massive way. And I was a listener of Doctor Who podcasts. Like that kind of really shaped my idea of what a podcast should be. But Deb was lamenting the fact that there were so few female voices on these podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
At which point, I'm pretty sure Michael Thomas basically tweeted in response with a list of female podcasters he thought would be good talking about Doctor Who. And pretty much Deb then went away, emailed the group and said, "Do you wanna?" And so we did.
That's awesome.
So it's a bunch of people from around the world. I'm in Tasmania, obviously. We've got Liz Miles in Scotland. Deb is in the US.
Philadelphia.
Erica Ensign, our producer, was in the US but married, thanks to Doctor Who podcasting, and moved to Canada. We have Kat in Kat is also in Canada, and Lynn Thomas is in the US.
Here in Illinois.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're from all over, which does make it a bit tricky when we're juggling time zones, as you can imagine.
I can imagine, since we're talking to you right now. Yes, yes, I can.
Yeah, like it's particularly tricky when you're trying to get like one in Tasmania, one in Scotland, mm-hmm. one in Canada, and we all have different schedules. So, but it's so we've just taken such joy from it, you know, just this we've been able to have this one wonderful ongoing conversation. I think of the but it's just it's really exciting. Like I just love talking about Doctor Who. Mm-hmm. I was raised Doctor Who, like it's been a big part of my life. There's something about talking about it with a group of women though that's just really special and specific, especially because we have such different opinions a lot of the time. And I think that's really important. You know, so often there's this idea that there's just like one female manifesto. We're all supposed to think about things the same way. We're all supposed to like be angry at Stephen Moffat for this one thing, or all supposed to like celebrate this other character for this one thing. It's like, no, we're all just people.
We should probably remember that last sentence, that we're all just people. Yeah. Because you're right, because people have different opinions.
That's right.
But it is really important to show a variety, I think, of female opinions, particularly because so often in these things, you know, if you've got one, it's the same with convention panels. If you always have like five blokes and one woman, then suddenly that one woman has this sort of
speaking for the whole gender.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, which is unfair and very constraining.
I don't remember who said it. At Chicago TARDIS this year, one of the companions said that Jodie Whittaker does not have to bolster the entire world of the gender of female. She's just one person playing the Doctor.
Yeah.
And that was a very strong statement. I don't remember who said it, but I tweeted about it. I can look back and find it.
It's very important, especially because we don't know at this stage. Like, this may be the only female Doctor we ever get, or it may be the beginning of a trend and we don't know. But that's often the problem with representation, especially when things start out, because there's that thing of like, are they doing it wrong? Are they doing it right? Are they doing it the way I would do it? There are so many different ways.
Does it match up with my headcanon, the idea that I thought was going to be happening? And boy, that's a complicated place to be.
Added to this, the fact that like Doctor Who fans always get stressed about a new Doctor, even without the whole like gender change.
Right.
I actually just wrote an article for Uncanny that I hope will be coming out in the next probably month or two. And it was specifically about this period that we usually have between the announcement of a new Doctor and the actual like first proper episode where you get to know who the Doctor is. And there's always this, I mean, you know, I think a lot of people have forgotten what it was like between the announcement of Matt Smith and when he actually showed he could be the Doctor, because there were a lot of months of people being really paranoid that he was too young, that he wasn't going to get it, that it was like, you know, there's always that stress.
Every time.
Yeah, but this is especially tense because of the gender issue, because a lot of people, there's been such a harsh backlash against the idea of a female Doctor, but also this, I think, so many high expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if they don't get it right, does that mean we can never have a female Doctor again? Or I don't know, it's all very tense.
Absolutely. So
we weren't talking about that, but anyway.
We got two others.
Yeah, you got two other shows.
Okay.
Galactic Suburbia is your award-winning podcast. Tell us about that one.
Yes. So Galactic Suburbia came about because, you know, podcasts were starting to become a thing, and we really wanted something that commentated on the publishing industry and all that sort of thing, but from an Australian point of view. There was a podcast at the time called The Sofa Nauts, which was an offshoot of Starship Sofa that we were big fans of.
Mm-hmm.
And when they decided to finish that podcast, they were looking for, like, does anybody else want to take this over? And a few friends and I thought, well, do we want to do this? Do we want to be The Sofa Nauts? And then we thought, actually, even if we're talking about exactly the same things, if you take that format of a group of people talking informally about publishing and science fiction and all that sort of thing, as soon as those people become three Australian women, it becomes a different thing anyway. Like, it was just so different. So we decided we had to start our own, you know, create our own format, create our own podcast. So we started Galactic Suburbia, which is named after a quote from Joanna Russ, who's one of the great science fiction critics of the 70s, where she was talking about the way that women were portrayed in science fiction and the kinds of stories that people assumed that female science fiction writers would write, which is galactic suburbia, right? It's the babies and romance, but in space. Mm-hmm. Not that there's anything wrong with that sort of story, just, you know, it's not all we want out of our science fiction. So, yeah, it's me. It's Elisa Krasnostein, who is a small press publisher, and Alex Pierce, who is a high school teacher and a book reviewer. And we just talk about the science fiction scene, about conventions, about books and TV that we love, about awards and news. And we have been doing this now for, I'm pretty sure we're at 8 years.
Wow.
Which is quite a big chunk of our life. I mean, especially as I have an 8-year-old who is like 6 months old when we started the podcast. And so it's like, it's a really big chunk of time. And the three of us have had this ongoing fortnightly conversation. Fortnight is every 2 weeks. Yes. I know I have to explain that to Americans.
You have to explain a lot of things to Americans, right? What is fortnight again? Let me write that down.
But, you know, we're very close friends, but we've become even closer because of the podcast. We live in different parts of Australia. So actually, apart from the occasional convention, this is the only time we really connect. So Alex is in Melbourne. Elisa was in Perth, which is the far left side of Australia, until very recently, where she's moved to Canberra, which is the far right side of Australia. So we're actually all in the same time zone, which is beyond exciting. But we still don't see each other very often. So that fortnightly conversation, we check in with each other. We talk about a little bit about our lives, but mostly about our publishing lives, our involvement in books and in editing and all that sort of thing. And it's been really lovely that this, you know, fireside conversation with our friends has this international listenership that has become so big and so substantial. Like when I went to the London Worldcon a few years ago, and so many people knew me because they listened to my podcast.
Wow.
So it's a kind of networking that we don't get, because I don't, like, I can't go to Worldcon every year. I can't go to international conventions very often.
If they pay us, maybe we could.
this is my way of, or our way of speaking to the larger community. And we have this wonderful community of listeners. Like, just in the last year, we set up a Galactic Suburbia Slack for listeners who support our Patreon. And what it means is we've got this whole, like, private chat community of our listeners, which has, you know, at the time we're like, oh, is that going to be a lot of work? And it's not a lot of work. It's just having like a lovely quiet party in one room of your house that you can visit anytime you like.
Nice.
So we've got very attached to our listeners.
Yeah, we have too.
Yeah, so that's, yeah.
Your third podcast is called the Sheep Might Fly podcast. Tell me all about that one.
Okay, that one is just me. And I set it up a few years ago because I wanted to do more with serialized fiction. It's something I'm really excited by. I really love writing fiction as serials, and it's something that the internet allows you to do that really we haven't been in a position to do serialized fiction very well since the you know, the Victorian time of newspapers that published fiction. So now with the internet, we can do this. And so, yeah, what I do is I have both original stories that I write specifically for the podcast, and also stories that have been published elsewhere that I want to get, you know, another bite of the cherry, find another audience. And I break the stories up into episodes, and, you know, I read them to my listeners every week. So the ones that I'm writing, I write them basically like a novella. I'll write it in chapters, specifically thinking of episodes. The ones that I published elsewhere, sometimes they're already broken up, but otherwise I just have to like try and find like the good stopping points. I do tend to stress out some of my listeners with my cliffhangers, but that's part of the fun of a serial.
Sure.
Oh, yeah. And I love doing it. And one of the things that it has allowed me to do is to build up series of long short stories, which is my favorite kind of writing. Like, I love writing at that long short story, the novelette to novella length. But if you're selling to magazines, it's quite hard to do it these days with ongoing characters, because, you know, it's like, how much setup do you need to have read the previous stories? You can do it, but it's a bit awkward. So having my own platform for those stories is really very freeing and fun. So I have a lot of listeners who follow particular series. They follow particular characters. I can say, oh, look, there's a new fake Geek Girl story coming out, or there's a new Castle Charming story coming out in a few months. And, yeah, so with the originals, I read the serial on the podcast. People listen to it there first. But then I edit the story as a whole, and then I'll publish it as an ebook.
Well, in fact, how can our listeners find out more about your writings and also more about your projects?
Probably to go straight to my website, which is tansyrr.com. I have links to all my stuff on there. I know I do a lot of different things, but I try and have like there's a front page which has lots of info about all my projects and my many, many different things.
You got so many great things going on. Thank you so much for joining us on, you know, a nice, lovely evening here and a lovely morning there, and getting the penguins out of the way enough to talk. That's wonderful.
Yeah, it is very important. You know, every morning we have to get up and shovel penguins off our front lawn.
Of course.
Well, yeah.
You're that close to Antarctica. You're right there by the penguins.
They're actually the only wildlife in this country that isn't trying to kill us.
The friendly ones.
They're just happy to see you if you have fish. Tansy, thank you so much again. I look forward to getting the copy of The Creature Court from your Kickstarter, and I look forward to hearing more from all of your projects and all of your different podcasts and all the things that you're writing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Scroll with it.
You know, we mentioned that How to Talk to Girls at Parties is a new movie from Neil Gaiman. You have in the show notes where we can hear Neil Gaiman himself read that short story.
In fact, there is the, you can actually link it. You could read it if you wanted to, or you could have what we like is to have Neil read it to you. Neil's mm-hmm. got a great reading voice.
Yes, he does.
And he really captures his work real well. Mm-hmm. So, hey, listen, you're driving around, the podcast's in, just go back in our notes and press it and listen to him.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot of fun.
Neil Gaiman is a great voice. You should really be paying more attention to Neil Gaiman. I've enjoyed a lot of his work. This week, I had got a chance, as usual, to sit down and watch the entirety of the next thing that's coming from Google. This is Google I.O. This was all week. They get all the programmers together and they discuss all the inside computer stuff that bores the heck out of Chip. Now he's making a face.
That's right. All right, so tell us a little bit of what's coming with Google, or as the other people like to call it, Alphabet, Steve.
Yeah. Oh, right. The Alphabet company gave us their Google presentation this week. That's right.
Good Lord.
The first thing that caught my eye was Gmail is now going to have an autocomplete feature. Where
that's worked real well for texting on the iPhone.
It has worked real well for texting, and it's moving into email. And
I'm saying that truthfully, right?
Are you?
No.
I love autocomplete. You don't love autocomplete?
Oh, I do.
My students, when we were watching this in class, because of course we watched this in class, my students go, well, you can already do that. You already do that. And I said, in email? And they went, what's email?
Exactly, Steve.
So that's a great feature for old people. The second thing that is a great feature for old people is Google is rolling out something called digital well-being, where they are going to show you a graph of how often you are using your technology. And
That is interesting. That might scare you.
Very eye-opening. It might scare you into maybe thinking about how you really use that technology.
There's this thing called Outdoors, Steve.
I've heard of it.
And you go out there, usually in the summertime, and you get your skin turns a different pigment. It's incredible. At least you'll know how high.
Radiation poisoning.
Well, you know how high to pull up your underwear at that point.
Yeah, technology is a thing that you need to be aware of, and you need to be aware of your usage. And this is maybe one way to do that. Google Maps is adding augmented reality to making walking directions more clear. I don't know if you've ever done this, but downtown Chicago, trying to walk from the parking deck or from the train station to where you're going, I almost always walk in the wrong direction for a block before I realize I'm walking in the wrong direction. I need to turn around.
It's going to yell at you. It's going to say, turn around, big guy.
This is not going to yell at you. This is augmented reality. It's going to use your camera, and it's going to put arrows in your view along with the map so that you go in the right direction from the beginning. They even have a little animated fox that you can follow the fox down the sidewalk to get to your location.
Excellent.
This is a great idea. I love this. The biggest one, the one that made my students' jaws drop, is the idea of Google AI can now make telephone calls for you on Excellent. Your behalf.
Excellent.
And it's frightening, and it's exciting, and
it, maybe I need to get my windows washed, Steve.
You could maybe you
maybe have, maybe my roof needs to be repaired.
Maybe Jolly Roger Telephone Company has already thought of this, where they can talk to the telemarketers for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. This is an exciting time. I think of my hard of hearing students, my deaf students who cannot communicate on a telephone. This is a robot that can do your bidding for you and can call the restaurant and make a reservation. The examples that they used in the presentation were amazing, like really, truly frightening, because basically Google has passed the Turing test at this point. Those of you who don't know what the Turing test is.
Tell us about the Turing test, Steve.
That's the idea that when a robot, when a computer can make a human believe that it's human itself, then we're really in trouble. Because if we can't see the difference between the skin jobs and the toasters, then the Cylons have a plan.
The Cylons. I've seen the Terminator, Steve. I'm not sure if I like that world.
We're inches away from it, sir. So be ready. Get ready, because the Judgment Day is coming. There's so many things on there. Go through our show notes. Go through and see what's coming. I enjoy this stuff way more than Chip does.
All right. Now, Steve, we have a homework assignment that's going to be due, what, next week?
Next week. You got one more week to get your copy of Renee. This is Jessica Eyes' time travel novel. We've been talking about it for weeks. It's coming due. Next Tuesday, we are going to be talking to Jessica Eyes. Send us your questions. Get a copy of this book. Read it and really enjoy it as much as I have.
Now, you can still get it. You can order paperback, and there's also the Kindle version. Mm-hmm. Enjoy this book, because it's going to be a lot of fun. And if you have a question or so, send it to us.
Yep, send it to us, either a voicemail or an email, and we will send it along to Jessica Eyes next week. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think, Chip?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. I want to thank our guest, Tansy Rayner Roberts, for coming in. That was so much fun. I enjoy talking to her so much. I really appreciate that we got through the time travel problem and got to talk to her. Thank you. Thank you, Chip, for being here. Thank you all for listening. If you need more information, give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, News.TooMuchScrolling.com. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
It's May 15th.
The Ides of May, Steve.
Where are the Ides of May? It's now a thing. We'll see you in the future.